Our next guest says skin color is just about the first thing we notice about someone when we meet them. It's part of the reason that today skin color looms large in our society.
The color of our skin can impact how we form impressions, how we create and use stereotypes, and how we attribute social meaning to different groups of people, whether we're aware of it or not.
Our guest today studies the science behind skin color and why it carries such cultural weight. We're joined now by Nina Jablonski, professor of anthropology at Penn State University and the author of Living Color, the Biological and Social Meaning of Skin Color. Nina, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you very much.
Well, when did you first get fascinated with skin color?
Nearly 25 years ago, and completely by accident, I realized that basically, we didn't have a cohesive theory for why humans came in so many beautiful and varied colors. I found this absolutely astounding. As a biological anthropologist, I'm really interested in how human diversity evolved and the fact that there was relatively little known about the evolution of skin color absolutely astonished me. And so, to make a long story short, 25 years ago, I started looking into this matter seriously.
Well, to go back to the beginning, what do we know now about why we do have different skin tones in the first place?
Well, we can think of it pretty simply as skin color as a biological adaptation to the intensity of ultraviolet radiation at the Earth's surface. And we have, as mammals and vertebrate animals, we have the ability to make a remarkable pigment that is a natural sunscreen. That pigment is called melanin. And basically, under conditions of very high ultraviolet radiation, such as the conditions that you see at the equator or in high altitude areas, you find people who have evolved a lot of melanin pigmentation. As we get outside of those low latitude or high altitude areas, we find people who have much less pigmentation. And just to make a nice evolutionary story, we know that our ancestral pigmentation for our species, Homo sapiens, was dark pigmentation. We evolved under very, very sunny conditions. We were darkly pigmented. We had supreme amounts of natural sunscreen, all of us, in our skin. And then, as a few populations began to leave our ancestral home of Africa around 70,000 years ago, those populations started to move into areas with less and more seasonal ultraviolet radiation, and people began to get lighter. All of these changes were caused by genetic changes or mutations in the pigmentation genes that are carried in our DNA. So the long and short of it is, pigmentation is an adaptation to the intensity of ultraviolet radiation, and pigmentation is caused by genes controlling the amount of melanin pigment in our skin cells.
And vitamin D plays a role in this as well, along with and in partnership with the melanin, right?
Well, vitamin D is one of the critical things that is actually made in our skin as ultraviolet radiation impinges on it. On a very strong sunny day in Wisconsin, you will have some ultraviolet B radiation in the sunlight. And those specific UVB wavelengths actually begin the process of making vitamin D in the skin. Now, if you live in really, really northerly places like Wisconsin or even farther north, those UVB rays are actually not present in the sun throughout the year. They're only present really in the late spring, the summer, and the early autumn. And so as you get farther north, what we've seen in the history of humans is that people have evolved mutations to become more depigmented, to become more lightly pigmented, in order to allow as much as possible UVB radiation to begin the process of vitamin D formation in their skin. So vitamin D is a part of this process, and it's really, really important for people who have dispersed to high latitudes.
So now if you look at a specific geographic region, is there reason to think that the skin color of people living there today may match the skin color of their ancient ancestors who lived there before?
Well, the quick answer is yes and no. In a continent like Africa or South America, you will find a gradient of skin color among the original indigenous people. Now, the problem is that in the last 500 or so years, there has been a prodigious amount of human migration and movement. And so many peoples have moved around and are no longer in their ancestral homelands. So we find a lot of people, especially those living in the big cities of the world, who have come from, in many cases, thousands of miles distant from their ancestral homes. So we see two patterns in most continental areas. The original pattern that was formed over thousands of years of evolution, that is a gradual gradient of skin color from dark to light. And then we find a pattern mostly in the modern cities that's all mixed up with all of these different immigrants from all over the place that have come to live in the urbanized parts of the world.
We're talking right now with Nina Jablonski. She's an anthropology professor at Penn State University and the author of Living Color, The Biological and Social Meaning of Skin Color. And Nina, we're talking a little bit now about the science. You've also looked at the social history about this too. Is there a social preference for lighter skin or darker skin color as a trend that we can track through history, or is it something that's not consistent?
Well, we have a few interesting trends, and one of those is that in the agricultural peoples of the world, people who have settled down and who have been farmers, regardless of where they live, Asia, Europe, Africa, what we see is a preference for lighter skin colors. Lighter skin colors in agricultural people denote wealth, denote the freedom to not have to work in the fields. And so in many agricultural populations worldwide, whether we're talking about India, Japan, Northern Europe, parts of Africa, we find a preference for lighter skin tones based on the fact that people who were lighter were less tanned from outdoor work, and so therefore had higher status. And that's quite a common pattern.
What about any religious underpinnings?
Well, we find some interesting misinterpretations of the Bible that gained a lot of currency in North America, especially during the time of the transatlantic slave trade. And in those misinterpretations of the Bible, we see different colors of people being accorded different values, and literally darkly skinned people were seen as being cast out and forever to be servants of lightly skinned people. But I hasten to add that this was a deliberate biblical misinterpretation. When you read the Bible, there is actually nothing that says this explicitly. But during the time of the slave trade, there were all sorts of influences, mercantile and money-making influences that very much wanted to demean the value of darkly skinned African people. And so biblical rationalizations, as it were introduced to try to make the slave trade defensible.
Okay, so you have all of this this history of social prejudice based around skin color, and today, as a rule of thumb, skin color can get used as shorthand for race. Just looking at the issue of race itself, does it make biological sense for us to divide people up over the construct of race? Is it a construct, or is there a biological foundation there?
We can say with certainty that there is no biological foundation for race. When we look at all of the biologically variable traits in the world, whether it's skin color, hair color, texture, eye color, head shape, so on and so forth, these traits do not travel in set packages that we can say track through time or that are found distinctly in particular geographical areas. What we find is that there are certain traits that are present in high frequencies in some areas, other traits that are found in high frequencies in other areas, and there is no correspondence between these traits. So it is fascinating that people have created the idea of race as a very robust construct in their heads. And one of the things that contributed to this early on in the history of Western philosophy was the fact that some early naturalists and philosophers said that there must be people who are grouped in specific groups, like African black people, European white people, and so forth. And these groups were, for instance, according to Linnaeus, they had, the naturalist Linnaeus, they had particular contents of their character and particular aspects of their judgment in addition to having certain physical traits. Now, this was a really peculiar thing to do in the 18th century, but it became really common practice to associate a group of physical traits with a group of behavioral and cultural traits. And sadly, these assignments of racial groupings of physical and behavioral traits have stuck with us since the mid-18th century. And so, lamentably, even though there is no biological evidence for race, and the genetic evidence of the last 10 years has shown this even more lavishly than before, despite this, there is a robust feeling in people's imaginations that race is real. And so anthropologists like me and other social scientists readily say race is a social construct. Now, that doesn't make it any less real to people who experience it and who feel prejudice on the basis of their perceived race.
We're talking to anthropologist Nina Jablonski right now about the science and social impact of skin color.
And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234 with your comments and your questions. Is your skin color a defining part of how you see yourself or how other people see you? Do you think we'll ever move past skin color in the United States, in the world, as a way of forming opinions, pointing out differences among us?
We're talking right now to Nina Jablonski, an anthropology professor at Penn State University. We're talking about the biological and social role that skin color plays in our lives.
You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your thoughts on how skin color plays a role in our lives to this day. And do you think we'll ever get past assigning people into categories based on skin color? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
And we go to our phones right now. We've got Daniel with us in Milwaukee. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, how are you doing? This is pretty fascinating. The genetics
Oh, no, Daniel, I think you're breaking up. If you can get to a spot with a little bit better reception, we'll get back to you and take your call then. As we talk with Nina Jablonski about skin color, and Nina, you were saying that race is essentially a construct, a social construct. There's not really any biological foundation there. So why is it that our misconceptions about race are so persistent over the years as the research piles up?
Well, people identify with groups called races. And so it, in a sense, it doesn't matter if the biological veracity of races has been disproven, because people identify with a construct. And so it becomes a real thing for people. So, you know, being a white person or a black person or a brown person in the United States, for instance, is, you know, has real social meaning, has real value, because it is a core of identity. So, you know, I think it's a moot point to some extent about whether race is real, because in many people's lives it is incredibly real, and they feel that they get they experience bias or prejudice because of their race.
And we're going to go back to our callers now. We're going to take Monica from Greenfield. Hi there.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have two questions for your guest. The first one is, I have heard once before that the ethnicity of a person comes from the mother, regardless of how what the physical appearance is. And related to that, if you could talk about the differences and similarities of ethnicity versus race.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Monica, these are good questions. The ethnicity of a person really is something that it doesn't come from the mother necessarily. In different cultures, people assume different ethnicities depending on the socialization and the social pressures around them. So it's not something that comes exclusively from the mother. It can be from a combination, or even people can assume other ethnicities depending on where they might be living. Now, the difference between ethnicity and race is that ethnicity is generally something that is associated with language as opposed to appearance and behavior. Although there's a lot of overlap between the two categories, and you'll find that in the history of the United States, both words have been used almost interchangeably. So it's a bit of a terminological mess. But basically, ethnicity is going to have more of a linguistic reference than race.
Monica, thank you so much for the call. We're going to go next to Daniel, calling back from Milwaukee. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, how you doing? I'm fascinated by this subject. My question is, it has to do with the DNA of skin tone. And I was wondering, like, if we know through testing, how many genes makes a person black or Aboriginal from Australia? And if it's like, if people who are darker, if there's more genes there or less genes, or the genes are expressed or dormant.
Okay, Daniel, thanks. Nina?
Yeah, great question, Daniel. Geneticists have been working like mad in the last 20 years on this topic, on pigmentation genes in humans. Now, we know that in closely related animals, there are over 120 genes that contribute to pigmentation. In humans, we have been able to identify between 20 and 30 that have a lot of activity, and some of them are more important in some populations than others. The amount of pigment that you have is not related to the number of pigmentation genes that you have. Rather, the pigmentation that a particular person has depends on the activity of specific pigmentation genes. So in some people, certain genes are highly active in certain forms, and in other people, the same genes are less active. And so one of the reasons that this pattern exists is that the production of pigmentation in our bodies is really complicated. The chemical pathways leading to the production of different kinds of melanin are complex, and then melanin is packaged in various ways in cells. And all of these things are dictated by different genes. And so the long and short of it is we find tremendous amounts of variation. And this is the coolest part from an evolutionary perspective. We find that different genes have contributed to some of the same skin colors worldwide. In other words, as people have moved from place to place, from very sunny areas mm-hmm. to less sunny and then back again, we see different genes being used to create more melanin or to lose melanin.
And we leave it there. So much to talk about. Nina, thank you so much for joining us.
It's been a pleasure, Veronica. Thank you very much for having me.
That was Nina Jablonski, anthropology professor at Penn State University. She's the author of the book Living Color, The Biological and Social Meaning of Skin Color.